What's up, everyone, and welcome back to I Am 30 as Fuck. I am joined here once again with my lovely sidekick slash producer. Say hello.
Sidekick?
Hello. He's basically here as the hype man. He gets me energetic, gets me going, packs my bowls before I start recording. He really gets me into the mood and into the spirit. He says I have to cut that part out. All right, I'm really trying to do a solo act over here, but I just still weird. But I just still feel weird talking to myself. So we're here having some enchiladas. Cheers. Which, by the way, I'm a pro enchilada maker. I use Trader Joe's habanero sauce instead of my beloved Tapatio this time, and surprisingly, it really took it up a notch, right?
I did.
All right, so there is a big, bold, caps lock trigger warning for this episode. This episode contains very sensitive topics, and listener discretion is advised. I'm not kidding. There may be words, topics I discuss in this episode that may trigger you, so please be sure you're in a good mental space to handle this episode. I'm not going to lie, I really did smoke 7 bowls before recording this because it is heavy. In this episode, I take you all on a trip down memory lane with me as I deep dive into red flags to be aware of when raising children. One of my favorite phrases to live by is, be the person that you needed when you were a kid. That is something I strive to do every single day. I take the experiences that I had as a child and use them as lessons for myself. It has made me very sensitive, attuned, and empathetic to the needs of my children. Okay, tell me you're bipolar without telling me you're bipolar. Literally, I went from episode 1 being called butt stuff and talking about my favorite butt plugs to this. JK, I'm actually not diagnosed bipolar. I mean, every time I go to the psychiatrist, they try to diagnose me, but they just cannot, because in order to be diagnosed bipolar, you have to have like manic episodes as well as the depression. And I have always just been depressed. Like, I wish I had those highs that the bipolars have naturally, but no, I just have plain old depression. And BTW, I say a psychiatrist and not my psychiatrist because literally they always quit on me. So I never know who I'm going to get. Like, I used to get sad about it, like another one bites the dust, you know, but now I'm pretty much over it. If I want to add another med to my regime, I just shoot them an email and it's done. And I want to clarify that my psychiatrist is a much different person. Every time I talk, my cat does that. Jesus Christ. My psychiatrist is a much different person than my therapist. My psychiatrist is just a man I see very seldom who manages my antidepressants and sleeping meds. And my therapist, shout out to Tammy, does not prescribe meds. In fact, she's actively and successfully worked with me to decrease and stop medication. Therapists you see like once a week or once every 2 weeks, depending on your situation. And I plan to do a whole episode on my experience with therapy soon because I got a lot of questions about it. So since October is almost coming to an end, and by the way, was that not the fastest October of your entire life?
It was.
It was for mine as well. Anyway, I thought, what a better time than now to talk about SAD, aka seasonal affective disorder. So I actually had my first SAD experience way before it was cool or talked about. So for those of you who are not familiar with SAD, let's look up the definition and I will read it to you. Producer.
Let me Google that real quick.
All right. Would you like to read it? All right. Thank you, producer. Seasonal affective disorder is a type of depression that's related to changes in seasons. It begins and ends at about the same time every year. If you're like most people with SAD, SAD, your symptoms start in the fall and continue into the winter months, sapping your energy and making you feel moody. So for the rest of this episode, I'm just going to refer to it as SAD instead of spelling SAD out, okay? I remember my first SAD experience very well. I was 11 and in sixth grade. The transition from elementary school to middle school was actually really, really hard on me. I was very popular in fifth grade. I had a lot of friends. I had a great teacher and I loved to perform. Most importantly, I had so much confidence. I had straight A's and life was just really good for me. God damn it. Babe. Life was just really good for me, as it should be for any 10-year-old. But something happened the summer from 5th to 6th grade. And most people assume something tragic happened to me that summer, but actually that didn't happen until the following summer. So for me, I just have a chemical imbalance. And for me, my chemical imbalance surfaced when I got into the 6th grade. I got to middle school and started puberty, obviously. And I felt disgusted by the way that I looked. I was used to having my clear baby skin, and suddenly I started getting random pimples. Like a lot of people, especially in Hispanic cultures, puberty and becoming a woman was just not discussed or taught, at least not for me, which is probably why I'm so vocal about sex today and body parts. I mean, I literally made this whole show about it. And then the advice that was given to me was usually by one of my mom's friends or like her boyfriends or something. I actually remember one of her boyfriends told me to pop my pimple that was in the middle of my forehead, by the way, and followed up by putting toothpaste on it. I had to go to school with a red raw circle on my forehead that eventually turned into a scab and then turned into a scar that I currently have today. Let me just paint you all a picture. I was not one of those girls that was always pretty. I'm not lying. Only a person. Only a person who has been ugly before could have as great of a personality as I have. My former ugliness forced me to have a good personality and be funny and learn different life skills. Being ugly at some point in your life is vital for becoming a well-rounded human being, and everyone should really try it at some point. So anyway, I was 11 and I had a lot. Don't move. I move. So anyway, I was 11 and I had a lot of thick curly hair. I had a lot of thick curly hair before it was cool. I was the only one in my family with curly hair, actually, and my mom didn't know how to style it, so I was forced to wear it in a slick back high ponytail with a tub of gel in it every single day, you know, to give it that extra crispy crunchy. Oh, and I had one boob, just one. You know how when your boobs first start coming in, one is bigger than the other one for like a year or two? Yeah, well, mine was like exponentially bigger than my left one. Fun times. Oh, well, let's not forget my gap tooth that I got made fun of forever.
You're laughing too much,
man. Sorry. That was a cherry on top. Again, this is way before gaps were a thing. In middle school, kids can be mean, and I was bullied a lot. Being bullied does have its perks, though. I mean, it's lessons. It made me super hyper aware of what my kids could go through and their feelings, and of the importance of instilling confidence into our kids. One of my daughters actually has curly hair like mine, and she's in love with her hair, and she's in love with herself, too. Right?
She is.
Yes. It was always extremely important to me to make sure I taught her to love her hair because I didn't want her to ever have to feel the way that I did. And by the way, check on your curly-haired friends because it's raining in LA and we are not okay. So during the time I was in middle school, a big trend for adults, my mom and her friends included, were diet pills. Now, I'm not talking about like hydroxyzine or whatever they sell nowadays. I'm talking like Mean Girls. What?
Hydroxyzine
is
your, is it different thing?
No, but it's spelled different.
No, you said hydroxyzine.
I know, hydroxyzine is spelled different than the fat one. What's the fat burner called?
It's not
it is, look it up. The producer's gonna look it up, but let me continue while he does that. So whatever they were selling. I'm talking like my mom and her friends were into like Mean Girl status stuff. Okay, hydroxyzine, HYDROXAZINE. It's different than the one that I have. It has a Y. The one that I have is not a diet pill, by the way. It helps me sleep.
Did you find it?
Hydroxycut.
Oh, Hydroxycut. Yes. Okay, my bad. My bad. Okay, so I'm not talking about Hydroxycut or whatever they sell nowadays. I'm talking like Mean Girl status, ephedrine, phendermine, the kind of black market shit that is illegal because of all the side effects and people dying. You know, stuff that actually worked. So seeing this all of the time gave me really a bad body image of myself. It gave me a big complex. Yes, at 11 years old. As parents, we need to realize and always remember that the relationship that we have with our bodies affects the relationship that our children are going to have with theirs. My mom never had a healthy relationship with her body, and I am not assigning blames. Our parents grew up in a very, very different time and a different era, and they did not have the knowledge we have now. Teaching kids healthy habits from a young age is so important. It is very important that our kids see us have confidence and love ourselves and our bodies and love them and theirs. I had no confidence as a child, so I made sure that I instilled it in my girls always. My mom was always worried that if she complimented me too much, that I'd become a conceited snob. And she didn't want to have a daughter. And she didn't want to have a daughter like that. But I promise kids are mean enough to humble your kid out if they're lucky enough to be a conceited snob, which is what I'd much rather have my kids be than lack self-esteem. So, feeling like an ugly duckling all the time with no guidance, my self-esteem was shot and my grades took a turn for the worst. I remember getting my 10-week progress report in the mail and having not one, but two fails on it. I had never even gotten a B before, so to go from straight A's to having fails and unsatisfactories made me want to die, literally. I was 11 and I wanted to die. Seeing such a dramatic change in your child's grades is a big, big, big red flag. Do not ignore it. The night that I got that progress report was the first time in what would lead to many, many years of cutting myself. I remember I had like a MAC makeup compact and it had a mirror in it that I slammed on my dresser so that the mirror broke into pieces. And that is what I used to cut myself. I remember spraying perfume in it afterward to give it like an extra sting. I was so ashamed of my grades and so ashamed of the way my mom said nothing about them, you know. Like sometimes parents just, I don't know, give up on their children and don't even punish them. But there's a look of disappointment. No words, no grounding, just a look. That's what got me. I started cutting myself because I was so hurt and disappointed in myself. That hurting myself distracted me and it felt good. I felt better. Relieved whenever I saw the blood on my arm. This was around November, December. It was the time of long, dark nights and short, gloomy days, kind of like we have now, except back then, fall and winter were actually like winter, and it was never hot in November like it is now. So Christmas decorations went up as usual, but for the first time ever, I remember looking up at my Christmas tree and feeling sad. This was also around the time I discovered what insomnia was. Although at the time I did not know the term for it or that it was even a thing. All I knew was that I could not fall asleep, ever. I lay awake, constantly worrying, always worrying about my school and grades. A reminder, mental health was not discussed the way it is now. My mom did not know what the fuck was wrong with me, but she didn't exactly hide it either. Back then, she was one of those people who didn't quote-unquote believe in mental health. You know the type. Although I'm very happy to say she has come a very long way now and tries her best to be understanding, but then not so much. I remember when I couldn't sleep, I'd cry all night because I thought something was wrong with me because I was so exhausted every single day. And I was always too worried, aka now I know was anxiety. Instead, I lay there crying. And then the sun started peeking through my blinds. I feel horrible because I knew I'd have to get up for school shortly. It was a vicious cycle. Lay in bed, couldn't sleep, cry all night, get up for school. I felt like no one noticed. And if they did, they didn't know how to help me. Sorry. Just sometimes it turns off or cuts off. That's why I do it in sections. In hindsight, everything is always 20/20, but hindsight is often too late. It is so important to be able to recognize behaviors in your children that could be signs of something serious, like depression or anxiety, or any mental health issue. So there I was, 11-year-old Bree, researching ways to fall asleep and developing bedtime and sleep habits for myself, which I now recognize as I was developing good sleep hygiene. By the way, sleep hygiene is a medical term, and it does not mean just being clean and taking a shower before bed. Good sleep hygiene is basically a list of things that you should and should not include in your bedtime routine. I was so advanced, but I shouldn't have had to have been. And you can definitely, if you haven't already, instill good sleep hygiene in your kids at a young age, and maybe it will prevent them from future episodes of insomnia. I remember when I developed my bedtime routine in sixth grade. I put a lavender puff on my pillow because lavender is known to help people fall asleep. Nowadays, we have essential oils and diffusers that infuse lavender as well. And for the girls, I have put lavender and cedarwood essential oils into their nighttime bathtub since they were babies. I also rub it on their ears, feet. I also would make myself warm milk and warm chamomile tea, which again, I also took that with me and started doing for my daughters when they were babies as well as now. I want to remind you, this was back in 2003, many years before I discovered my beloved melatonin and Ambien. But most importantly, what I think helped me most at that time, and I still do it to this day, was when I started journaling. I wrote everything down. I'd make to-do lists, goals, routines, habits, worries, and I was very, very detailed so that when I fell asleep, all of my worries would be left in my journal. After about a week of this, I finally just started to sleep normal again. I'm sharing this with all of you because I want us to always be better for our children. We have so much more knowledge now than they did in previous generations. Our parents did the best that they could with the knowledge and resources that they had. But we now know so much more than they did. We have access to so much more information than they had. I hope that the stories I share with you all stay with you when raising your children or when it comes to your nieces, nephews, or any children in your life. I hope that listening to this podcast can help you recognize red flags so that other children do not have to experience things like this. And most of all, I hope this podcast encourages you to speak up if you notice potential red flags in a child. Talk to your children. I promise it can save a life. All right, moving on, I'm going to get into the Ask a Ho questions that we have for this episode. Question number one, does medication for mental health affect your... Question number one, does medication for mental health affect your sex drive? Yes. For both men and women, my holy grail antidepressant is Celexa. That is the medication that I've been on the longest. I started taking it in January 2019. At the time, I was very sexually active, like five types a day sexually active. Do you remember that?
I was doing 2016, man.
I said 2019 earlier. You're annoying.
That's the wrong guy.
You're so annoying. Anyway. When I started Celexa, it did decrease my sex drive, not too drastically though, but once a day was fine for me, which was more than most people. I also had gotten an IUD around the same time, so that also had an effect on it. And on the subject of IUDs, I also want to add that hormones play such a huge role in mood and mental health overall. I used to underestimate it, but then after a year of stacking my birth control pills, which means skipping the last week of placebo pills and jumping straight into the month in order to not get your period, I went off birth control and immediately got a Mirena IUD, which is the plastic one that has hormones and supposedly keeps all the hormones in your uterus instead of traveling all over your body. Getting off birth control is a big change on the body. Once again, do not underestimate it. You will feel different. For me, it was dangerously different. I started getting hot flashes and mood swings like crazy. Remember? Mm-hmm. I had never experienced a hot flash before. I had only heard about them when my grandma was going through menopause. And let me tell you, they are so uncomfortable. You literally are driving and all of a sudden you're soaking wet and literally steam is coming off of your body. So that was the physical aspect of the huge hormonal change. Now let's talk about the mental. I felt crazy. I was irritable as F. I'd have crying spells, a mental breakdown, spaz outs constantly, and I felt like I couldn't get out of my head or snap the F out of it. I felt like I had no control over my emotions, and I was constantly up and down and very full of rage out of nowhere. I wanted it to stop so bad. It lasted about 2 weeks. 2 weeks of mental torture, basically. I even gave myself a literal concussion, and my doc tried to trick me into a hold. Luckily, the staff didn't do their job very well that day, and I was able to escape. But yeah, it was bad. I went a bit off topic. But I wanted to discuss birth control and hormones a bit because I've had multiple friends feeling off after getting off birth control who have asked me if certain symptoms were normal and for advice. Hold on, I need some water. All experiences discussed in this podcast are from my own personal experience or things I've seen during my 9-year nursing career. So please always do your own research and find what's best for you. Moving on, question number 2. Is being sleepy all the time a sign of depression? Yes. Although there was a time, I was about 26, and at the time I was not on any medication, and I was sleepy all the time. And I noticed I was feeling down all the time as well. This lasted like 5 months, started in the fall per usual, but lasted longer than usual. So I went to the doctor and I found out that my vitamin D3 was extremely low, like really low, almost non-existent. This was right before I went vegan, by the way. So although a vegan diet is low in vitamin B and D, and they should be supplemented, my low vitamin D was not due to veganism. I just want to clarify for anyone wondering. So, what is wrong with you?
No one's wondering. Yeah, no one is wondering.
For anyone wondering. God. My producer's kind of an asshole. Just kidding, he's not. I'm sure people are wondering. So if you notice yourself feeling tired or fatigued a lot, it's a good idea to get lab work done because there can be multiple factors that affect it, including vitamin deficiencies and hypothyroidism. There are simple lab tests that can be done to check for this. It's best to do this instead of just going straight for the antidepressants or anti-anxiety medications. I actually have a story about myself skipping labs and going straight to the antidepressant when I was younger and the negative effect it had on me.
Oh, shoot. My bad. Go.
So I was 19. I had just started my nursing program. I didn't really know much about pharmaceuticals yet. I had gone through a very traumatic experience the previous year, and my boyfriend at the time passed away in a car accident that we were both passengers in. So that was a very difficult year for me. And on top of that, I was in college going to parties, trying new things. Oh, I forgot I was going to take this part out. Hold on.
You're trying cocaine.
Mind you, I was 19. I didn't know the effects that drugs had on people and dopamine, etc. So I was just feeling very low. And my friends never felt those things. So I was like, of course, this would happen to me again. What is wrong with me? Anyway, I went to urgent care and some random doctor prescribed Prozac and Xanax. This was in 2011, guys. It's way harder to get your hands on Xanax in California these days. You'll need to go to Mexico for that type of thing. But anyway, yeah, no follow-up, nothing. I basically turned into a zombie. My mom was like, what the F is wrong with you? And honestly, I lost my memory for a week from taking the Xanax as prescribed. I mean, it worked. I wasn't depressed anymore or anxious. I literally felt nothing. No emotion. I remember walking into the middle of the street around Balboa Park. All my Valley people know that's a big street, and I literally didn't care if I lived or died. So I stayed on it for like 3 weeks, the Prozac, that is. And then I decided that I just didn't like the way that I felt, so I stopped. Big mistake to stop a medication cold turkey, by the way. But like I said, I was 19 and I didn't know. I felt so depressed after. Like for a month, I felt a dark cloud or blanket was hovering over me at all times, and I could not break free from it. Luckily, I'm just a naturally strong person. So I pushed through. God, I am. Anyway, obviously I am. So I pushed through by telling myself every day that the black cloud was temporary And after a month, it went away, and I saw the light again. However, after that happened, I told myself that I never take psych meds again, and I was totally against them, especially for young people. My views have changed since then, although I'm personally still against psych medication for young people because of that experience. Okay, you can stop. All right, that's it for this episode. I hope you guys all enjoyed it. And if you did, feel free to let me know, DM me, leave me a 5-star review, whatever. I love the feedback. And I'll see you next episode where the title is Clean Vaginas Matter. Bye.